kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Yeah, it could get brutal sometimes. I don't know the Fahrenheit to Celsius conversion, so I can't really.
I don't either. So it's difficult to discuss weather and temperatures with people from US. But
we could just stick with the fact that it's hot as balls lately.
Yeah.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast, episode number 195, creeping on up there to episode 200. No Chris today because he just moved. Also, it's just about 2 in the morning, so I'm kind of crazy for doing this. But I am being joined right now by Jaakko from Finland from 10 Tons Limited. Jaakko, how are you doing, sir?
I'm fine. How's everyone? Indeed, I'm Jaakko from 10 Tons, Finland, and I'm really looking forward to this. We were supposed to do this like 3 months ago already, but we never got around to actually doing it.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're finally here. We have been covering 10 Tons releases on our show for months now. You were actually some of the first developers to accept our dumb little show as reviewers and let us cover your games. And I'm thrilled that you're finally on to talk to us, or me, I guess, because no one else is here.
Yeah, likewise.
So, of course, the big release that you're on here for right now is Neon Chrome. It just came out on PlayStation this week. It's coming out on Xbox next week. For those who don't know what Neon Chrome is, give us the sales pitch. Tell us what the game is, what it's about, and why we need it in our lives.
Neon Chrome is a top-down twin-stick cyberpunk shooter, and there's all sorts of like roguelike elements to it, like there's sort of permadeath, but it's not like that brutal. It's more like in Rogue Legacy that you get to upgrade permanently as you go along the game, and procedurally generated environments, and you can destroy most of it, and yeah, a lot of fun.
I'm really digging the game. I have played it now on PC. I have played it on PlayStation 4, and I've been playing it on Xbox One, and I have sunk a ridiculous amount of time into this game. Just how did you make it so fun, and why can't I stop playing it?
Well, I suppose because it's a bit grindy, I suppose. So that's probably one of the things. So it's not like what we've seen from reviews so far is one of the things that we get sort of repeated complaints about is that it's supposedly kind of hard, and that's I can get that. It's not an easy game.
No, it is not.
But it's sort of like, because dying is like it's a part of the game. You really need to die quite a bit so you can get to like buying those permanent upgrades, and that's just the way how you progress in the game. So dying isn't like, I think when some people, when they die 3 times in the game, they feel like, man, this is hard. But it's sort of a bit like missing the point in that, yeah, you are going to die 3 times and 30 times and 300 times eventually. that's supposed to happen.
Yeah, a lot of people, they're just like, oh, well, I can't beat it and I'm dying a lot, so I'm just going to stop playing it. It's like, no, you're playing it how it's supposed, you have to die. You need to die so you can upgrade your character. Unless you're like really fucking good at games, you're going to die a lot. It has to happen.
Yeah. But I think about 30 deaths is sort of a quite common low end for beating the game once. The like I suppose like top 5% of gamers maybe get to do it in about 30 deaths or so. But yeah, for most of us, it takes more.
Like 50. I think on the Xbox One, because I haven't been playing that one as much as the other platforms, I think I'm on like 22 deaths or so, and I just finally this morning beat the spider boss.
Yeah, well, that can happen. It's like, but that's also, it's sort of a really good thing going for the game, especially regarding the difficulty, that it sort of balances itself out eventually. It's just, yeah, you may die like 10 or 20 or 50 times more than someone else, but you are going to beat the game anyway,
because
you are going to get better, or your character.
Just never give up, never give up, just keep murdering things.
And for those like who find it initially quite easy, it's fun because it sort of like keeps going on forever. Once you beat it once, you just get to like start over from the where you get to keep everything you've unlocked and upgraded, but the game starts from beginning and everything just becomes more difficult. The enemies become like stronger and I suppose a bit faster too, and certainly they shoot more. And there are more of them, so it's we know people have been like on the 8th run.
Jeez,
and it's quite insane at that point.
Yeah, that sounds pretty insane. Like I'm having a hard enough time on stage 5. I can only imagine what it's like to beat the game 8 times over.
Yeah,
and keep going. Oh my lord,
The walls and stuff don't stay up very long at that time, because everyone is just shooting like crazy amounts of damage.
And I was so thrilled when I beat the spider bot this morning, and then I realized that it backed me into a corner and I could not escape its explosion.
Yeah, we had discussions about if we should make the final explosion quite so big.
So the joy of finally beating it and the achievement popping, combated by the fact that I just died and I couldn't even pick up the money that the spider bot dropped.
Yeah, but
next time I'm gonna get that son of a bitch.
Yeah, but that's an experience. We sort of figured out that it's going to be a memorable moment, so we left it in there.
Nice. I'm loving the game so far. There are how many different characters in the game, or different classes, I guess?
I think 5. Because I wasn't actually. There's 11 of us at Tentons, and half of the company was making Neon Chrome, and I was in the other half. So I don't like have every number sort of ingrained in my brain, but I think 5.
Are there any certain classes that you have used more frequently than others?
Well, yeah, I like the is the energy shield on Hacker now, because we changed it just before release. So it was, or is it the techie? Well, I can't remember anymore. But anyway, the one with the recharging energy shield, because it's actually my preference anyway in like basically any kind of game, that I like to have some sort of regenerating health if at all possible, and that's like the only character in the game that has that, because I play pretty much always quite aggressively, so I don't mind getting hit a bit, and in every other character class in Neon Chrome, you end up dying eventually that way.
Yeah.
So I always take the energy shield guy.
I should use that one more. I've been doing the hacker a lot, just because every time I don't pick the hacker, I seem to run into 40 treasure chests that require the hacker.
Yeah.
So I've just gotten into the habit of, if there's a hacker, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Hacker is really good, like, early in the game, just because you get quite a bit more money. So it's, you sort of get a head start on the upgrade with Hacker.
And then, of course, what good is a twin stick shooter if there aren't a wide variety of weapons? There's, let's see, assault rifles, burst rifles, shotguns, SMGs. What's your favorite out of them?
Well, I'm a bit torn about it, actually, because I sort of like the burst rifles, because the downside is that they are sort of difficult to use, because if you don't get that burst to hit completely, then it's like just a bit painful. But when you get those perfect bursts where all of the bullets hit, it's just so, like, ridiculously powerful, because you can basically take down most of the enemies with one burst. But the trouble is that you need to actually hit with that burst. So, I don't know, it's basically like burst rifle. If it's not too difficult, any given situation that I happen to be in, and if it gets too difficult, I sort of hope that I had the SMG, I guess.
Nice. I have been defaulting mostly to the shotgun, just because it's kind of easy mode.
Yeah.
The wide shot, just those little robots that just circle around and then detect you and shoot at you, one shot and they're gone. So I love taking those guys.
And shotgun is also, like, really good up close. Neon Chrome is one of those sort of rare games where shotgun really, I don't know, it sort of fits my sort of mental image of how shotgun works up close. And yeah, you do get to one shot, basically. Well, I think most of the normal enemies.
Except those dicks with the shields, man.
Yeah.
Those guys are brutal sometimes.
Yeah. Personally, I might have, like, put a little less of those in there, but they do serve a purpose, gameplay-wise.
And I think I ran into a floor that had about 20 of those guys, and yeah. I was getting swarmed and just, I got destroyed.
Yeah, the downside with those guys is that if your, like, secondary weapon or ability isn't something that explodes, it can be a bit painful to fight against a bunch of those.
Yeah, I think I breezed through all of my missiles on that floor.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fun. I am absolutely loving the game. I am thrilled that we've been able to cover it on the show with the PC release, then covering and talking about the PlayStation release, and again the Xbox release. It's just a fantastic game, and I'm thrilled to see it hit consoles.
Yeah, it's we are, like, probably the Xbox One launch next week is the one we are looking forward most to, because it's just on Steam and increasingly on PlayStation these days, there's just so much competition that it's like, well, we don't actually, like, drown without anyone noticing, but we can see that the just the sheer amount of competition, it's affecting how the our games perform, and Xbox One is, like, slightly better that way.
This week in general has been huge with game releases, especially on PlayStation, where I think our show, we had four games that were exclusive to PS4 this week, and it just seems overwhelming with how many games have been coming out lately.
Yeah, there was 17 PS4.
Jesus.
if you count the launch of Smite and Blood and Wine DLC for The Witcher 3, which we do count because they are, like, in competition in a way that a lot of people are going to play those, so they might not have time to play Neon Chrome. But yeah, Xbox One is it's a bit better so far because there aren't quite so many games coming out, and especially like twin stick shooters aren't that plentiful yet on Xbox One.
Yeah, if on Steam, they're like every other game on Steam is a twin stick shooter.
Yeah, yeah, and also on PS4, I think there are quite a handful of really nice titles in the genre, and actually just like, was it a week or 2 weeks ago, at the Nordic Game, there was the ID at Xbox boss Chris Charla was like talking about stuff, and one of the things he mentioned, which is increasingly important these days, is time to market.
Yeah,
and we have seen it so well, because if we look at the PS4 titles that we released 2 years ago, they sold like super well, and even stuff Sparkle Unleashed was our first Xbox One release, and it did also just super well, and we were racing a bit other twin stick shooters for Xbox One, and just I think it was yesterday that I read that the Full Mojo Rampage is coming to Xbox One at the end of the month.
Yeah, that one looks pretty good too.
And yeah, that's one of the titles that we feel that this is like pretty direct competition, because, well, there's enough similarities in there. And we are just very happy to be about 20 days on the platform. And I suppose they are sort of bummed that, god damn it, we got ahead of them, but still the situation is like pretty good on Xbox One, because there's not that many great twin stick shooters out there, so we are really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think 3 weeks difference is pretty good. At least it's not coming out the same week.
Yeah, yeah.
So you always have that going for you, but you have the head start anyway, so fuck them, right?
Yeah, it's just well, it's interesting to sort of like compare game launches as time goes on, and we can sort of see that it's the overall trend is like slightly downwards, which is of course like understandable, because there's the amount of games isn't going down ever, it's just going up, so that's sort of what just happens automatically.
Yeah, it's a growing market and tons of releases. It's
and those are actually two other great things, that is that more consoles are of course sold every day, that so there are more and more customers every day, and also we as a company, or rather the founders of the company, made the excellent choice about 10 years ago to go as multi-platform as possible. So it's really like a huge blessing for us that we get to release on pretty much every platform out there instead of just one or two. I'm not sure if how we do if we only released on one or two platforms. It would be difficult, at least.
Well, I know some of your earlier games started off as PlayStation exclusives. I think Crimson Land was first on PlayStation. Tennis in the Face is still only on PlayStation. What was it like branching out to other platforms with Crimson Land and then with the Sparkle titles? And has there been any consideration of bringing Tennis in the Face to Xbox One? Because that's still one of my favorite game titles of all time.
Yes. We were drunk when we came up with the title, which is quite obvious. But and it's
so good.
Yeah. But yeah, we probably will bring Tennis in the Face to Xbox, because the only it's sort of we were a bit unlucky with Xbox One first, because it took us about, I don't know, like 6 months longer to get the dev kit than we would like. So we already got to releasing quite a handful of our games on PlayStation, and because of the parity clause thing on Xbox One, we can't just like bring our titles which have already been released on PS4 to Xbox One quite so easily. We have to like put in some extra content in there, which isn't bad. Like they don't like demand anything like spectacular or extreme amounts of new content or features, but there has to be something. And what really causes the delays is that there's the conversation just must be had that what are we going to add to this game, and could it be this, and well, that sounds a bit too much, could it be just this, and it usually or easily takes like weeks or months even, because the people at the ID at Xbox side of things are busy, so they like it takes time, and that sort of causes delays. But other than that, it's like a pretty straightforward case for us. We just like to distribute all our games on every platform we can get.
Nice. Do you have any ideas of what you would add to Tennis in the Face?
Well, it's probably going to be more levels, because it's either extra features or extra content, and I think content is the sort of more sensible one, because creating levels is like quite straightforward, and it's people generally enjoy more content, and we could come up with more features, but we just like don't have any in mind like right at this moment.
I think it would be neat to have a customizable ball. Like you could change the tennis ball to like different colors, or like an eyeball or an Xbox logo, which I think would be funny.
Yeah. Well, that's an idea, and we will certainly discuss that with the Xbox guys, because we haven't actually started the discussion about Tennis in the Face yet. I can tell you that the our next title for Xbox One is going to be King Oddball, which it's actually, I really like that. Because we have these three games which are like sort of technical siblings. The first was King Oddball, and then we made Tennis in the Face, and then we made Baseball Riot, and yeah, that's actually exactly the reason why Baseball Riot was the first one to Xbox One, because it wasn't released on PS4 yet, so we could just launch them at the same time with no extra stuff. And then we started the discussion with King Oddball a while ago, and we have that all done and set up, and we are ready to release it. Maybe it might even be out like late this month, maybe, or early next month, possibly.
That's great to hear. I loved that game on the Vita. As soon as you said King Oddball, I just got legitimately excited that's coming to Xbox.
It's I don't know. There's something about the game. It's just like brilliant, and we can totally understand how it has become something of a cult classic, because I don't know, one button gameplay. How hard can it be?
Yeah, it's just fun casual games. I've noticed that 10 tons, they have like three different games styles that I've seen so far, in the one button gameplay, puzzle gameplay of like Baseball Riot, Tennis in the Face, King Oddball, and then you have the actual puzzle games like Azkend in the Sparkle series, and then the twin stick shooters like Crimson Land and Neon Chrome, which those games are so drastically different from the rest of what you guys have put out. How is there such a vast difference between what you guys are releasing?
Well, that's actually, it comes down to the like early days of the company, because Crimson was actually the founders of the company made it like in early 2000s. I think the last version of the classic one was released in 2003, and that was also when they made the game when they were still in university studying computer science, and they just made Crimson Land and put it out on PC as shareware, and it became sort of a quite popular. So it was like where they just needed to found a company to sort of have an entity to reap in the benefits of a popular shareware title. So Tentance was really founded on Crimson Land. And back in those days, when they started figuring out what to do next after Crimson Land, they realized that the casual game market was like really healthy and nice back then. And that means like exactly games like Sparkle and Ascend and like a lot of Match 3 games and hidden object games. We actually never got to making hidden object games. We just made mostly various kinds of Match 3 games. But that was like what the company did for pretty much like 10 years. Because first it was just the casual PC games market, and then iOS and Android came along. So it was really natural to bring those games to mobile also. And yeah, that was basically it up to a really long time. It was basically up to when Steam Greenlight came to be, and also it was around the same time that the where we actually started on consoles with Vita in well that was about the same time that Steam Greenlight came to be, and at which we realized at that point that yeah, these like actual hardcore gamer markets on PC are and console are opening up a bit. And because we already were on PS Vita, we got the PS4 dev kits like really super early. So we just realized that, hey, we can get to, we have access to these markets, so we should start making games again specifically for these markets. And that's how we, first we remastered Crimson Land, and then we spent some time porting our back catalog to Steam and consoles, and now we are at the stage where we are like creating new like gamer oriented titles for Steam and consoles. Neon Chrome is the first one, and Xenoraid is the next one sometime later this year.
Nice. I had no idea that Crimson Land dated back that far. That's really cool to hear.
Yeah, it's actually the remastered version is like 99% of the code is straight from 2003, and we just basically redid all the graphics and like made a few design tweaks, but that was it.
That's pretty awesome. See, we're learning shit on this show. I never knew that.
Yeah.
I kind of
pays to listen to podcasts.
Indeed. Except for ours. Ours is kind of crappy. What are you going to do? I kind of wish that my co-host Chris was on the show, because he is a huge, huge fan of Crimson Land. He played that for, God, weeks and weeks and weeks after we got the codes for our show.
Yeah. And
it's still one of his favorite Xbox One games.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I don't know exactly what it is about the game, but it works in some weird way.
Classic gameplay, man. It's just the classics never die.
Yeah,
they just get a new coat of fresh paint and look prettier.
It's quite obvious, I think, that Crimson Land sort of lives on in Neon Chrome in various ways. There are all sorts of bits and pieces of similar thinking behind the games. And I think that's probably going to continue, because we have been discussing that it's great to sort of be able to make any kind of games we want. It's just like one of the nice perks of being indie and so forth. But still, we probably should sort of pick a specialty at some point, at least to some extent, because that's what grown-ups do, I suppose. But yeah, twin stick shooters very well might be it, because, well, we like we like playing them and we like making them. And we made a couple of decent ones, so we just might continue to do that.
Hey, if it's working for you, you gotta stick with what's working.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Neon Chrome came out on PC a couple of months ago.
It was April 28th.
How's the reception been on the PC release?
Well, it's been awesome in the way that, well, I haven't checked today, but the last time I checked it, there was the Steam user review average was 96% positive.
Damn.
And out of 106 reviews or so. So that basically sums it up actually quite well. Because, yeah, 96% positive is like, that's amazing. Very few games get that, but only like 106 reviews, which sort of, well, you can look up pretty pretty accurate sales numbers from Steam Spy these days, but yeah, the sales haven't like been quite as amazing as we would have hoped, and certainly with that kind of user reviews, one might assume that it's been like a huge mega hit, which it hasn't really, but it hasn't been bad by any means, and we are fine with the sales and so forth. It's working for us, but that's just one of those things that we see that back when we released Crimson Land Remastered like 2 years ago about on Steam, it did like quite a bit better on launch in Steam. And just because we could see that the game just was so much more on the front page, which is, I think, pretty much directly related to that there weren't so many games out every day back then. And now there is, so you just get less visibility and it pretty directly translates to less sales. But yeah, that's the game these days, and we are fine because yeah, we have console platforms also on our side, and we sort of have a lot of faith in that the game will like find its audience and keep selling quite nicely for a long period of time, just because it's a great game. It works.
I know it's still early in the PlayStation release, but has there been any word on how sales have been there yet?
Well, yeah, we did see the first day numbers, but there was, I don't know if it was related to the amount of titles released on that day, but there was, it sort of took, because there's always some delay in when a sort of, when there's a launch date and the games start popping up into the store one by one and over several hours. And it took like a really long time for Neon Chrome to pop up there. I think it was one of the last titles that actually started showing up in the store. So like practically speaking, the game actually launched like one day later than it actually did. And yeah. I think they do that differently on Xbox One, because to us it seems like Xbox One titles are actually released like late in the previous day of the actual launch date. And I think they are doing that just for that reason, so that they can make sure that all games are actually out on the launch day and early on in the launch day too.
I think a lot of stuff, at least over here in America, I know a bunch of games just came out tonight on Xbox One. Games that are set for Friday, they pretty much drop at midnight. Right now, Anima, Dangerous Golf, Among the Sleep, a bunch of games just showed up at around midnight. So I'm guessing Monday night at midnight, if it's coming out on the 8th, do I have my days right?
Yeah.
Or Tuesday night.
Yeah,
going into Wednesday. I think Tuesday night at midnight going into Wednesday is when Neon Chrome will show up on the Xbox store.
Yeah, probably so.
I'm excited to see how it does because I'm digging it. I already had a 3-player party going on locally, which is batshit insane, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Playing with multiple people gets insane quick.
Yeah. Local co-op is just, we just basically like always like to include it if for not any other reason that it's like relatively, well, it's not actually simple at all. There's like all sorts of stuff that always happens and has to be considered and taken into account. But yeah, anyway, we like to add it because it's fun. And yeah, of course, the next sort of, because Neon Chrome is actually the first game that we made that is in actual like 3D graphics. We've been making 2D graphics games up to Neon Chrome, and Neon Chrome is actually the first one that uses 3D graphics. So we just sort of upgraded our own, because we use our own engine and own technology. So with Neon Chrome, we updated it to like have 3D capabilities, and I suppose the next upgrade in some upcoming game would be to have online gameplay capability. But those are just like sort of technical things that cost some ungodly amount of money to make, and we just, as a small studio and publisher, we just can't like do everything at the same time. So we just have to pick our battles and do them one by one.
I was actually just going to ask if online was ever considered for Neon Chrome.
Yeah, it was. And actually, that's one of the things that it's sort of already there in Neon Chrome in a way that the architecture of Crimsonland is such that there's just absolutely no way at all that could ever be an online game, because it's just, well, the software architecture of the game is just such that it just couldn't be made into an online game ever. Everything would have to be rewritten, so that's like a no-go at all. But in Neon Chrome, we sort of made the architecture such that if we had online code, we could add it there even later on. It's the architecture doesn't prevent it, and that's basically what it comes down to, is that the architecture has to be such that it supports sort of, because you have to predict and interpolate all kinds of stuff in online games. So, well, it just has to be at the really core of the game to be even remotely possible. And yeah, we made Neon Chrome that way, that we could edit or we could use Neon Chrome as a base for some future online game, which we have certainly discussed. There's all kinds of interesting possibilities.
So I'm guessing that if sales do well for the game, the online can possibly come in a future update to the game?
Well, I don't know. We haven't discussed that specifically. But yeah, it's well, at least it's technically possible. I don't know if it's like feasible financially, but it's possible, or if we use Neon Chrome as a base for another game, or if we indeed make a sequel for Neon Chrome, then it's like, well, like I said, we just need to sort of pick our battles in these kinds of major technology leaps, that we can't do everything at the same time, but we can do one or two things per game.
That makes sense. You only have so many resources.
Yeah.
So can't push yourselves to do things that just aren't possible.
Yeah.
So, God, I just had a question on the tip of my tongue and I lost it. That's what happens when you do a show at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I can do it for you.
So what games have you been enjoying lately? When you're not working on Neon Chrome or on any other titles, what have you personally been playing?
Well, I think most lately, early in the year, I played a lot of XCOM 2. I sort of like, well, that's basically Well, actually, the classic XCOM games back in like 15 years ago or 20 years ago, I really loved those. And the new XCOMs aren't bad either. I may not agree with all the design decisions, but yeah, they are fun. And then I played, I think, Nato Hero and Hotline Miami 2. And now, lately, Darkest Dungeons, which is... It's like a Darkest Dungeon. It's awesome in so many ways. I really like it.
Were you a fan and not a hero?
Well, I didn't actually get to play that much. I played for a couple of hours, and I thought that it's well. I'm at the stage that where I'm still sort of like learning and forming my opinion. Still, so I'm not completely sure. I think it's well. It certainly has a lot of things going for it, but I don't know. I don't know if it might get a bit too simple eventually. I don't know.
The game actually gets really hard. Through it. We had John from Roll 7 on our show twice already, and I was excited when that was coming to Xbox, and he was thrilled to come back on to talk about it. So yeah, I've been a big fan of Not a Hero, and
yeah,
it makes me happy when I hear people playing that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I like really like the style and the sort of the attitude that's gone into the game. It's awesome, and yeah, well, I still need to play more, but I can sort of, because I don't know so much about the game, like I wasn't aware that it's going to get hard, but I sort of assumed that because it's like there's this, I think it's this, well, it's quite perfect for me, at least in this early stage, that it's sort of simple, the main mechanics, but yeah, the thought occurred to me that this is going to be amazing if they just crank up the difficulty curve enough.
Yeah, it gets difficult, and it also gets a lot more insane. It's
yeah, and those are things that I enjoy.
Hey, insanity is always fun.
Yeah, and that's like a lot or a big reason why Darkest Dungeon is so fun, because there's like, well, the game is like basically a Lovecraftian insanity simulator, largely. It's awesome. That also has the style of execution is just excellent.
I'll have to check that one out. Darkest Dungeon, you said?
Yeah.
We'll have to track that one down.
It's amazing. I had, because there's this, this insanity mechanic or stress mechanic that all your characters get stressed as they go into the dungeon, and they need to sort of release that stress in a way. And one of the ways to release stress is to go to a brothel. I put one of my guys into the brothel to, like, you know, an event, and then, like, he didn't want to come out. He stayed there for 3 weeks.
That's hilarious. That is awesome.
I should have, like, sort of realized what the... because there are these traits, or I think they are quirks, as they are called in the game, and he was a nymphomaniac, and now I know what that means. You
oh,
don't want
God.
Into a brothel.
Oh, shit. That's funny. I'm definitely going to have to check that one out.
It's an awesome game.
Is that the direction that we could see 10 Tons moving in next? Is a gritty, dark brothel simulator, I guess?
Let's just say that we do enjoy our Lovecraft, and we may have something cooking which may have some elements of Lovecraft.
Interesting. Stuff. Is that something that might be in the works for later this year, next year, further down the line?
Well, it's I suppose the best case scenario is like super late this year, more likely sometime next year, because we still have to, and I'm the team that is making Xenoraid is actually my team. It's my first like proper personal game.
That is definitely cool to hear. How many projects are in the works over at 10 Tons? It seems you guys have a lot going on.
Yeah, it's sort of a... Well, we hope to have the situation a bit more clear in the like next few months even, that we hope to have like three projects going on at all times. And now that we have wrapped up Neon Chrome and we are finishing Xenoraid and we have the third one that I just mentioned underworks, or it's just like coming out of prototyping phase and going into production. But yeah, once we got the Neon Chrome team to working on something new, then we sort of have three projects going on. But we just now need to sort of somehow unsync the productions a bit, because it's not the best situation to have three or even two games like coming out at the same time.
Yeah, it's all about scheduling.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas of what you might be doing next? Are you going to be focusing more on new genres or shooters, or are you going to be dabbling back in the Sparkle territory again?
Well, I think it's like all open, really, because we do get a lot of requests for another Sparkle game, and personally, I would really like sort of enjoy doing that. It's possible after Xenoraid, my team might want to do that, and it might make even sense. But yeah, it's like. Yeah, well, we have the another. Let's just say that it may be a twin stick shooter, and it may have some Lovecraftian themes to it. That one is sort of just starting now, and we are finishing Xenoraid, and yeah, no idea what the Neon Chrome team will do next. We actually don't have like that.
So you mentioned Xenoraid a few times. What is that game? I don't think I've seen anything on that one yet.
As I mentioned, it's my like first proper production and game that I have like personally come up with the concept and design, and I'm leading the team and so forth. So it's as much my game as anything can be, and it's a vertically scrolling shoot 'em up in space, as they often are, and we hope to release it like maybe, I don't know, like in September maybe or so.
Is that going to be on Steam first, or are you looking to bring that to consoles first?
Well, it depends. It's in Steam closed beta right now. It's still not quite finished, but we hope to finish it in the coming weeks, or at least in the coming months. And we don't know how we'll be releasing it. We discussed that it might be a good idea to try to launch it simultaneously on everything on Steam and consoles, but we'll see. Because we saw with Neon Chrome that there are benefits to launching on Steam first and then a bit later on consoles, mainly because we get we get so much feedback, so we get to make at least small improvements and maybe even medium improvements just based on the like 1 or 2 weeks live on Steam, because we get so much feedback.
I'm actually looking up a trailer for Xenoraid right now. It looks really cool. Kind of mad at myself that I didn't look this up earlier.
Yeah, it's, well, we haven't really like promoted it yet much, and we should really start that because it's indeed like nearing completion. But yeah, it's one of those things. I'm not a big like shoot 'em up fan, in a way that like some people are great shoot 'em up fans, and especially I don't really like enjoy bullet hell games at all. But it's just I felt that like vertically scrolling shoot 'em ups is just it's a genre that it was sort of big and sort of like a big part of the spectrum of games there were like 20 years ago or 25 years ago, and back then I sort of enjoyed them, but lately it has sort of the games have sort of, well, they haven't really like disappeared from the market, but they've really like gone into, well, largely into the bullet hell direction, which isn't like, I don't enjoy the memorizing of levels and patterns and that sort of stuff. I like more of that general action shooting game stuff.
I'm guessing Xenoraid won't be a bullet hell. It'll just be like a standard shooter instead of million bullets on the screen at once.
Yeah. Well, there are situations where there are a lot of bullets on the screen, but the thing is that it's
it'll be manageable.
and the point is that you can't memorize them because it's like it's all procedurally driven. So there are no levels, like we don't set the levels by hand. It's just there's going to be some amount of enemies of certain types, and then they are just going to dynamically appear on the screen and attack you. So there's never a situation where you get to like, or you are asked to memorize the level and be able to beat the level just because you remember where the enemies and bullets are coming from. Because that's the thing I really dislike. That's like Xenoraid is going to be like completely dynamic, just action, combat, shooting, test your skills stuff.
Definitely good to hear. I'm not a big fan of memorization shooters. I'd rather, if I die, it's my fault because I backed myself into a corner, or I just went the wrong place instead of a wall of bullets came and I didn't move the precise pixel that I needed to move.
Yeah, and it's like, it's awesome to hear because I've been, because when we started making the game, we didn't actually know that well if many people felt that way, but like, yeah, over the course of production, we have like luckily heard that message quite a lot, that there are people who think precisely the same way.
Yeah, I mean, bullet hells can still be fun. A somewhat bullet hell-ish game that just came out on PlayStation this week is called Score Rush Extended. It's not exactly a bullet hell because it is all dynamic, so it's not like you have to follow an exact pattern to win it, but it's like a twin stick bullet hell. I don't know if that would be too many bullets for you, but my co-host Chris and I, we both had a blast with that one, and I think we're actually going to be talking to those guys next week on the show. But that might be a fun one to check out if you're looking for a fun shooter.
Yeah, I definitely will. Because I've been doing quite a bit of competition analysis throughout the last year. And I've been playing quite a bit of those games. But yeah, there's not that many like non-memorization-based games out there, which is good for us, at least. And yeah, I do hope that there like will be more those kinds of games, because I think the sort of the basic concept of the genre is a good one, and I enjoy it, and there should be more games like that, but without the memorization stuff.
Like Ikaruga, it has its moments, but sometimes you need a breath of fresh air. But yeah, I'm excited to see Xenoraid. I'm excited to see more about that. I'm excited that King Oddball looks to be coming to Xbox One. I'm excited that Neon Chrome is coming out next week on Xbox One and is out now for PlayStation. It looks like 10 tons is just fucking nailing it lately.
Well, yeah, it sort of helps that we have, well, we have, like I said, we are using our own technology, which is, it's pretty like handy these days. We don't need to spend a lot of time on porting all the versions that we publish, and now that we are just about to get three projects going at the same time, things should be like really looking up for us. And I think actually we had like when we moved to PlayStation 4 early on, it was because we got there so early, it was a really excellent situation, and we actually calculated that at some point about 2 years ago, a full 7% of PlayStation 4 games were 10 tons games, which
wow,
was funny.
That's really cool, actually.
Yeah.
So is there anything else in the back catalog that you guys are looking to bring to new generation? Because I know you mentioned, you know, the Sparkle titles, Azken, bringing those older titles to consoles. Is there anything else in the back catalog?
Well, it's. I think we are pretty much tapped on that one. I think like the most obvious one, and even a couple of less obvious ones have already like been brought to consoles, and it's, there might be maybe one or two titles, but it's entirely possible that going forward we are only going to release new titles on consoles. And we released the sort of like a more made for a mobile game called Spellspire, which is a combination of a word game and a role playing game, and it's actually like really fun. We released it on iOS and Android maybe like a month ago or so. So we have been thinking about that. We might release that on the consoles too, but we just would have to sort of because it was actually originally made as a premium or paid download game, but then because, well, seeing how the mobile market went like completely to free to play, we sort of converted it to a free to play game and release it on mobile, and if we wanted to bring it to consoles, which we might, because I think it would work, we would have to sort of reconvert it back to a premium game, which certainly is doable, and that's also a possibility.
I'm actually looking up Spellspire on my iPad right now and installing it.
Yeah, you should. It's like, it's really fun. It's simple, but it's fun.
It looks really cool. It looks similar to LetterQuest Remastered that just came out recently.
Yeah, that was one of our, I don't know, inspirations, but we just saw that, hey, LetterQuest is out there on Xbox One and it's out there on Steam. So we were thinking about that. Spellspire isn't like that dissimilar, or it's actually probably even a bit simpler in like a control scheme kind of way. So we thought that, hey, maybe we should consider that too, and we are certainly considering.
I vote Bring It On, because I know LetterQuest Remastered was really, really big among my circle of friends. It seemed everyone I talked to was playing that one. So I think it's unique enough to get some attention on consoles. I think that'd be pretty cool to bring over.
Yeah. Yeah, and the great thing is that us being a smaller studio is that we can sort of, it's okay for us to like bring a title to a console and have it sell like a couple of thousand units or 10,000 units. We can do that. It's like there's a tiny profit in it for us, and it's fine if like not everyone is going to play it and buy it. We can like make do with sort of modest numbers.
Yeah, it definitely looks cool, though.
Yeah, you can probably tell it's the same artist that made King Oddball and Tennis in the Face and Baseball Riot. It's the same art style.
Nice. Yeah, I dig it. I'm excited for that one to download. I'll be playing that all day today.
Yeah, it can happen. It's like sort of addictive.
Downloading now. Sorry, I got distracted downloading a game that I just learned about right now.
Yeah. We don't mind.
That looks really, really good. So, yeah, I'm excited. 10 tons. God, you guys are just putting out good game after good game.
Yeah. We try. But it's one of those things that because we've been around for almost like 15 years now, so we feel that we are sort of experienced. But yeah, we have been, I suppose you could say we underestimated how significant leap it is from because we've been creating like those casual games like Ascend games and Sparkle games and so forth. And how big a leap it is from those kind of games to making games like Neon Chrome and Xenoraid. It's like, well, we aren't like in trouble with them, but it just turned out that, yeah, it like basically took like at least 6 months longer to create each title than we sort of thought it would.
But wow.
it's just one of those things that you just have to sort of learn and like learn to scope and learn to estimate on how long stuff takes.
It's a growing experience when you're branching out. You're going to learn from everything.
Yeah.
I know my show's Growing Pains. We have definitely learned how to better manage our time and better manage our shows, but it's just, you're going to keep learning no matter what.
Yeah. And because, well, while we started with those sort of games with Crimson Land, it was like, well, first of all, it was a long time ago, and secondly, it was done over a couple of years while the guys were still students. So there was like very little to learn really from that, because the situation is of course like completely different now. More people and we are doing it full time and so forth.
Nice. All right. I had one last question I wanted to ask about Neon Chrome. The soundtrack is fantastic. Who worked on the soundtrack? Is it available to buy anywhere?
Yeah, it is. The soundtrack is actually like in a lot of our games is we almost exclusively contract our sound work to an American composer called Jonathan Gear, and he's done like the music for Sparkle games and Ascend games and yeah, for Neon Chrome and for Xenoraid, and didn't actually work on Spellspire, but for most of our games we used Jonathan Gear and I think pretty much all of the soundtracks are available, at least on Bandcamp and probably some on iTunes also. And also the Neon Chrome soundtrack is available as DLC on Steam with the game. And yeah, that's another thing that we've been started doing lately, is that we just invest a little more in the soundtracks so that they like become a bit fuller and wholesome, like actual standalone purchases. And we do, like, he's an amazing guy. He's like super well rounded and seems like there's nothing he can't do. And we do get a lot of like really enthusiastic feedback about his music.
I am definitely going to have to grab the Neon Chrome soundtrack. I had no idea it was available on Steam. So I am definitely going to have to do that. Yeah, we normally play music at the end of our shows, and I figured since you're on, it would make sense to play some Neon Chrome music at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it is. I know we're going on about an hour now. I will say it has been an absolute pleasure to finally get you on the show and talk to you. It has been a pleasure working with 10 Tons for the past how many months, seeing all the games that you've released, being a part of that. And I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to thank you for allowing my dumb little show to work with your awesome company.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure, and we need to do this again. I don't know, like with Xeno Raid, maybe.
Hey, sounds good. Anytime, just let me know. We'll get something set up, and hopefully we'll get the show going the first time we talk about it.
Yeah.
So, do you have any other things that you want to discuss, or anything that you want to talk about before we end it?
I don't know. Not so much, really. I don't know. The other guys are giving me some sort of hand signals. I suppose I should be doing something. I don't know. But yeah, I suppose I should go, like, work, maybe.
Quit fucking around on the dumb show and get back to work.
Something along those lines, maybe.
Well, again, thank you for joining us, and thank you for talking to us, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks.
Have a good one, Yako. Sorry, Yako.
Yeah, you too, Joe.
Oh, man, another good conversation. I love this show. I love talking to awesome people like that. It's just so much fun. Really quick, I am going to talk about a handful of games, despite not having anyone to bounce ideas off of. But there were three games that I needed to talk about that just came out tonight, and they were embargoed, so I wasn't able to talk about them earlier. The first one is Kick and Fennec, developed by Jaywalkers Interactive, published by Abstraction Games. It released tonight, June 3rd. I don't think I ever got a price for that one. Oh my god, I'm an idiot. I'm so good at this game sometimes. Yeah, this game, this show. Oh my lord, I can't even talk tonight. Hey, it's 3 in the morning. What do you expect from me? Pulling up the price now. Kick and Fennec. Jaywalkers, killing time until the window loads. It is available for $14.99, available now on Xbox One. I believe it is also available now on PlayStation 4, but I can't confirm it. If not, it's coming out incredibly soon. This is a platforming action game. You are a little kid who woke up in a desolate world, and you meet a flying robot named Fennec, and after you are saved by the robot, you find that Fennec's battery is broken and you have to replace it. So the game is basically a long journey to get to the tower at the end and get a new energy core for the robot. The game it plays out like a 2D platformer, move left and right. All the jumping in the game is handled by this big ass gun that you find, and you basically aim away from where you want to go, and the kickback of the gun projects you in the direction. There's a lot of hidden areas that you could find in each of the stages. Each stage has 50 little gears that you could collect, as well as a hidden gear, like a special one, that collecting those can unlock new outfits through the game. Can't even talk tonight. There are, I believe, 5 or 6 worlds in the game. There's about 60 some stages in the game overall, so there is a lot of game here for only $15. The stages obviously get progressively harder through the game. You're going to find a lot of tricky jumping and platforming. There are 3 difficulties. On easy, you have kind of like a guideline to show where you're going to fly with the shots, as well as you don't have to worry about Fennec's battery life. Normally, if you're about to die, Fennec will rescue you and teleport you to safety. Each time he does that, it uses up some of his power. You can replenish the power by collecting those 50 gears that you find through the stage. But on easy, you don't have to worry about the battery life. On normal, you still have the guideline, but you have to worry about health. On hard, it removes the guideline and just gives you an arrow to show your general direction. So things can definitely get tricky as it goes on. The game is gorgeous. Visually, it is just absolutely stunningly beautiful to watch. I am giving this one a buy it. It is fantastic. Awesome game. It came out on the Vita a while ago, and it's great to finally see it come to consoles. So it is no longer restricted to a tiny little screen. But no matter which way you're playing it, whether you own it on the Vita or whether you pick it up fresh now, it is worth playing. So again, Kick and Fennec, developed by Jaywalkers Interactive, published by Abstraction Games, and it released right now for $14.99. Next game is called Fragments of Him, developed and published by Sassybot Studio, which is a fantastic studio name. It released June 1st for $9.99 on the Xbox One. It is available now on Steam as well, and then a PlayStation 4 release is coming later this year. It plays out in a first-person view, and you are basically following the lives of four different people in the game that are all tied together, and the story threads interweave. I don't really want to get too much into the story because that's kind of the point of the game, given that it plays it again. It's more like a visual novel than a traditional game. There's not really any action in the game. You're basically following along these moments in these people's lives and just watching and listening. There's no puzzles. There's no difficulty. There's no action scenes. It's very much like an interactive movie or an interactive play or just a drama. It's really good. It's very interesting. It is it's not really a game. So if you're coming into this looking for some kind of fast-paced action game, you're not going to get it. We've covered visual novels or similar games in the past on this show. It's definitely more like a walking simulator than an actual game, but that it's still a really good experience. It's not the longest game. You could probably get through it in like 2 hours, 2.5 hours or so. The fact that it's only $10 makes it a lot easier. The game originally launched on PC at $20, and I think at $20 I would have said to pass on it. But at $10, it's definitely worth checking out, especially if you're in the mood to just chill out, relax, and experience a really good story. So if you're looking for something like that, pick it up. It's, again, only $10, so it's worth checking out. And props to Sassybot for bringing something this unique to consoles. It's cool to see that not every game that comes out anymore has to be a fast-paced action shooter, which leads me to the final game to discuss this week, which is a fast-paced action shooter called Hard Reset Redux, developed by Flying Wild Hog. You might know them as the guys behind the Shadow Warrior series. It is published by Gambitious Digital Entertainment. It released again June 3rd tonight for $19.99. This is a remake of the old Hard Reset game. The description of the game is the acclaimed first-person shooter returns fully upgraded and more beautifully challenging than ever. This is a straight-up action first-person shooter. There's no fluff to it. There's no multiplayer to it. This is 100% just an action-packed single-player shooter with tons and tons of things that you can destroy. Like, there's destructible cars, destructible walls, explosions, environmental kills. The game is beautiful. It's just impressive to see how much shit can happen in the game at once, which is really awesome. The story sequences are all kind of told in comic book format with comic panels and text bubbles and all that, so that's an entertaining way to do it instead of just pre-rendered visuals. Game can definitely get challenging. You can come across tons and tons of enemies. Even playing on lower difficulties, you can get overwhelmed. But thankfully, on the lower difficulties, you have plenty of health and shield to help you get through it. So playing on easy, you'll be able to enjoy this story fairly painlessly. On playing on hard, you're going to get your ass kicked, and chances are you'll really like it. If you are looking for just a straight-up, challenging, brutal, first-person shooter, and you already completed Doom, for $20, this is definitely one to check out. Try it. Give it a go. Watch a stream on it. It's worth checking out. It's good stuff. So, yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy good week for games in general between the last episode and then again tonight with Kick and Fennec, Hard Reset Redux, Fragments of Him, plus Neon Chrome, which we just talked about, which came out earlier this week on PlayStation 4, comes out next week on Xbox One for $14.99, and that is definitely one that you need to pick up and check out, especially if you are a fan of Crimson Land. One more thanks to 10 Tons and Yako for joining me on the show today. Stay tuned for next week because we're going to have plenty more shows, plenty more interviews, plenty more shit to talk about. And yeah, thanks for listening. It's been a long late night here, and hopefully my rambling wasn't too bad for just being me. So again, thanks and have a good night, everyone.